This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz.
Snake from Community Waikato.
And I'm Roseanne Murray from Community Waikato.
We're going to be chatting to you today about the Incorporated Societies Act. I'm really going to be the one asking Roseanne a lot of questions because over the last, I think it's got to be 2-3 years now, you have been working on this, getting everybody is interested, ready for reincorporation. And I know we touched on this a few weeks back. For those of you who listen to us regularly, you would have heard Roz say, come on, people, pull your finger out. Let's get this started. We are now into January. We're a couple of weeks in. And so today we're going to talk about, well, what does that look like? If you're sitting there going, I want to do something, but I don't know what that is, let's talk about it today. So tell me a bit about what you've been doing, because you've spent a lot of time understanding this act and then supporting groups to start thinking about the process.
Yeah, thanks for that, Holly. Look, and I think for a lot of our community incorporated societies, it's probably quite daunting, the whole prospect of having to relook at your constitution, review it, make sure it complies with the new act, and then going through the re-registration process. And prior to that, obviously needing to call either an SDM or as part of your AGM, depending on the timing.
Let's explain those words, those letters.
Yeah, good thinking. So SGM is a special general meeting, or an AGM is your annual general meeting. So for incorporated societies, you must hold an annual general meeting each year. And so depending on the timing of that.
Which is getting short now, to be fair.
It is, because we need to all be very mindful that we all need to re-register before the 5th of April 2026, which is this year, which is only like now less than 3 months away.
Yeah.
So time is ticking, but the key thing is don't panic. However, we need to start taking action now.
So can I ask you, because I wonder if for a number of groups who are small, they're probably not a lot of legal expertise, they've got lots of expertise, maybe not legal, and they're going, I don't know how to write this, and we can't afford a lawyer. How are we going to do this? So, you know, what do we say to small groups who are thinking they do need legal advice to be able to navigate this?
I don't believe you need to have legal advice. The company's office have actually pulled together a really good online resource called the Constitution Builder. It does mean having to go online, so needing to be able to access a laptop to be able to go online. And it's really like answering multi-choice questions and going through all of the clauses that you need to have in your constitution to make sure it does comply with the new act. And when you get to the end of the questions, you can save that document. It's a draft Word document, and you can print it out. And what I'm recommending to people to do is to take that copy, find your latest constitution that you're currently operating to.
And we're going to come back to where you find it, the carry
yes,
on.
Yes, yes, because you'd like to hope that people do have a hard copy of it somewhere, or they've got it saved in a file somewhere, but that's not always the case. Then you'd compare the two and look at what is it that we want to keep in the new constitution that wouldn't been there because it was only a template. We have to be very mindful that there's over 24,000 incorporated societies throughout New Zealand. So the online constitution builder that companies office have developed has to be fairly generic. And all it has in there are all of the clauses you need to have in there. But there might be some other clauses that you have in your current constitution that you'd like to add in there as well. And you're more than welcome to do so.
Excellent. So as long as you're including those very core ones that are required, can you give me an idea about what sorts of clauses the new act is requiring is in your constitution?
Sure. So some of them is around your membership. So your membership, you need to have any new members need to consent in writing to be a member, and that needs to be a clause in your constitution around that. Also, too, that you need to keep a register of all your members and a contact detail for those. So again, that needs to be in there.
So it's interesting because I think probably the intent of the Act for years was that I imagine there was an assumption people would have that they would have their membership, that they would know how people had signed up, they'd know how long they'd signed up for, and they'd have their contact details. But we know from experience that this isn't what's happened, right?
That's correct.
And so this is the Act, really, that update is to try and align with actually this is what the intent of the law is. So let's make sure it's really clear in the legislation.
That's right. And I think the key thing for all of our incorporated societies to remember is that your constitution is your set of rules. It's the framework of which you should be operating within. And so often we've got societies that can't even find their constitution.
Yeah.
All right.
And you might find it's called rules, by the way, because they're the same thing.
Yes.
Yeah. So if you come across, oh, here's the rules, that's what it is.
Yeah.
If you can't find either a hard copy in all the documents you may have, where would you find it?
Sure. So you just need to go to the company's office website and then click on the Incorporated Societies Register. Then you just need to put in the name of your society and then it should come up with your details. You click on your details and it'll have a tab that says filings and you just need to go there and hopefully your most up-to-date constitution has been uploaded into that register. If you are also a registered charity, you can go on to Charity Services website. Again, put in your organisation name and it should come up with your all of your details and all your key documents there. But again, that will also depend on whether you have filed your latest constitution with Charity Services as well.
You just mentioning Charity Services, you made me think of something that I want to just reiterate with people or iterate. Because I didn't do it the first time.
Mm-hmm.
Roz had talked about that this is really important to do, but you don't need to do it if you're a charitable trust. And I thought afterwards, we have so much confusion about being a registered charity and being a charitable trust. And so what I don't want people to do is go, oh, well, we're an incorporated society, but we're a charity, so we don't need to do it. If you're an incorporated society, you do. Being a trust is different from being an incorporated society, and having charitable status, you could actually be a trust or a society. You could be either of those.
Yeah.
It's a shame that the word charitable is in two of those things because it confuses people, but your entity type is either society or trust, and then you have overarching that a status, which gives you donee status and various other
tax
eligibility
tax exemption status
exactly
correct.
So that is your charitable status, but you can, because I hear a number of people go, oh, we're a charitable trust and we are an incorporated society. You cannot be that.
No, that's right.
It is not possible.
And the other way I describe it is it's your legal structure.
So
as you've said, your legal structure is either as an incorporated society or a charitable trust. And then it may be that either of those organisations can apply to register as a charity. And
it's,
as you said, is the status then.
Yeah.
So I had someone yesterday who is part of an incorporated society, but they're also part of a charitable trust. And so they were thinking that they had to do this, go through this process for both organisations. So you could imagine the delight on their face when I said to them that, no, only for the incorporated society, because incorporated societies previously had to come in under the 1908 Incorporated Societies Act. So obviously just a wee while ago.
Yes.
And now we've had the more updated 2022 Act.
Yeah.
If your organisation is a charitable trust where you would have trustees and you're working on behalf of what we call beneficiaries, people that are going to benefit from your purpose, your mahi, you comply under the Charitable Trusts Act 1957.
Yeah.
In saying that, I'm sure that at some stage in the near future, they may have to start going through that process as well.
There's been some amendments as well in the past. But absolutely, I imagine at some point. So just, we will come back to that point because I do think it's really important. And probably the key message here is that you know what your entity type is.
Correct.
Not your charitable status. That's irrelevant. What is your entity type? So, And how would someone find out what their entity type is?
Yeah, well, probably same sort of thing when you're looking to go and find your constitution is go onto the company's company's office website. Firstly, go to the Incorporated Societies Register, put in the name of your organisation. If that doesn't come up, that's probably a good sign.
Yep.
But make sure you get the wording correct and the official name of your organisation. Some organisations have the word the.
Yes.
Before, I think we, as a charitable trust, Community Waikato is actually the Community Waikato Trust, isn't
yes.
it? So just make sure that you've got that correct title of your organisation. So then if it doesn't come up on the Incorporated Societies Register, I would then go to the Charitable Trust Register, which is also on the company's office website, and again, put your name of your organisation in there. Another way to look at it is probably what is on the end of your title. So
yes.
Incorporated societies generally would have society. They
or
might have incorporated or Inc. as
yes.
an abbreviation, whereas a charitable trust would generally always have the word trust on the end of it. So that's a good starting point.
Yeah.
But otherwise, if you can't find any documentation, I suggest you go onto the company's website and try both of those two registers.
It's really important that you do know, and it's important if you're in governance of any of these that you actually, under both of those pieces of legislation, have fiduciary duties, which are slightly different, depending on your entity type. So, it is really critically important to at least access some of that information so you do know what is required of you.
Yeah, and look, going forward, I'm recommending to everyone that the Constitution, like a lot of the other documentation that's important, like your financial accounts, your annual budget, are all stored somewhere that's accessible. And preferably somewhere online. So it could be using Google Docs, or it could be Dropbox or some other online system you have where you can all access it at different times, and it's not all just kept on one person's laptop. So many stories we hear where maybe the laptop dies and it's just impossible to be able to access any information from that laptop. Or if, something happens and maybe it's the secretary or president and they leave and they take their laptop with them and you've got no way to access that information. So make sure you have more than one place where all that information can be stored and accessible.
I think that's very good advice. And of course, make sure it's uploaded the latest copy, with the company's office.
Yeah. And so for all our incorporated societies having to go through this process, you have to actually upload your latest constitution when you go through the re-registration process.
So that will be really helpful. One of the other additions or changes in this legislation is the requirement to continue to review your legal document. So it's really about asking people to continue to engage and to understand what it is actually saying.
Yeah, totally, because as we said before, it's your actual framework, it's your set of rules that you operate within. And so all committee members, all board members should have access to the Constitution and have read it. I'm not going to say that you have to remember every single word and every single clause, but have a really good understanding
of what's in it. Yeah. Can you think of any of the other specific changes that are being required by this new piece of legislation?
Yeah, definitely. So going forward, this is a really interesting one, is it says that each incorporated society needs to have a governance body, so i.e. your committee or your board. Again, one of those ones that we always took as a given.
Yeah, took for granted.
You have to have a minimum of 3 natural persons, which is an interesting...
So tell me what a natural person
is. Well, yeah, I know. What I believe it means is it's not your dog or it's not an AI. Or anything like that.
Does it also mean it's not like a company? Do you know what I mean? It is a human, not an entity, as one of the trustees.
Yes,
or the governance members.
Definitely. Yeah. But your members, if you were a body corp type organisation, your members can be organisations or a group of clubs or something like that, like we have of a lot of our community sports hubs. But yes, the actual governing body needs to be actual people. Yeah, most definitely. You need to have a minimum of 3 of those. You need to have a contact person, a minimum of 1 to up to 3 contact people. And in your constitution, it has to have how you either elect or appoint those people.
Yeah.
And that doesn't have to be a member. It could be your accountant, if they do a lot of your financial affairs, something like that. It's just to make sure that the Incorporated Societies Register has up-to-date contact information. Now, this is one of the challenges they're having at the moment, is because they don't have all of the up-to-date information of where to send the notification about the re-registration process. I heard the other day they're actually now ringing organisations as well, because there's still a huge amount of those corporate societies that still haven't yet re-registered.
Yeah, and I'm thinking, so this is a bit of a different journey, I suppose. So I sit on the board of a community house. We have decided, partly because of this legislation, and something we've been thinking about for years, but the legislation has given us the impetus to say, actually, we think we are a charitable trust in nature, so we need to wind up our incorporated society and become a charitable trust. So we have set up that incorporated society, sorry, the charitable trust. We've set up the new entity. We're still working on the bank account side. That can take a little bit of time.
It sure can.
And so we weren't going to re-register our organisation because we are moving to a new format. But in talking to our team at Community Waikato, mm-hmm. got very good advice that actually we'll need to continue to operate the incorporated society for a little while, because there's some things that will happen that will take time, like a contract we have with government. Now, we kind of need to finish that and to work through setting up the new relationship with our new entity. All of our funders need to know what our new name is. Like, it's just things that take time, right? So we've decided, actually, we're going to need more time than April to do this. Now, that means that we actually now need to go through the process of reincorporation. That's a job for the next few weeks for me. But I think that that's something for our groups to think about. So if you're listening to this and saying to yourself, well, actually, we are becoming a charitable trust anyway, so we're not going to do this, you're actually going to need to if your incorporated society isn't being wound up by the 5th of April.
Most definitely, and that's what we're actually recommending to different groups that are talking to us about that similar concept at the moment, where it's like, oh, not really sure who our members are. Maybe it's the neighbourhood, as you say, like a community house or something along those lines. And so that potentially the charitable trust legal structure is the best way for you to operate going forward. But right here, right now, our recommendation is just go through the process to re-register under the new 2022 Act, and then over the next sort of 6 months or so to complete the transition across.
And I tell you why I think that that's very good advice, Rose, and not just because it's our team, but that's partly, but also because part of the new legislation makes it very clear about winding up and what that looks like and transfer of assets. Mm-hmm. Now, it is possible with older incorporated societies, there might not be the clarity that's really needed in your founding documents that enable that process to be really smooth and don't put you at risk from members challenging what happens with the assets, particularly when you're just essentially wanting to transfer them from one entity to another that's the same one but not, you know.
Yep.
So actually going through this process, I think, allows you as well to make sure you've dotted your I's and crossed your T's in terms of that legal process of winding up the incorporated society and formally transferring assets to the new entity.
So correct, yeah. And it's a lot of it is just around making sure that your constitution, your set of rules, is up to date and fit for purpose for your organisation now, not, say, 20, 30, 40 years ago, whenever it may have been first set up.
Yeah, and the intention, of course, is that you will continue to make those changes as the world changes. I recall a number of years ago, I was the manager of an incorporated society, and didn't necessarily understand what that meant in the depth that I probably needed to. Didn't realise we had members, you know. But also things like calling a meeting, emailed around that we're going to have this meeting. It was a special general meeting. And then realising later on that our constitution required it being in writing, it had to be in person, the meet, you know, like it was all based on what you might have done in the 1990s.
Another classic one is a notice in the paper.
Yes, sorry, that was one of the things. It did say that you were required to advertise in the print media, in the newspaper.
Public notice column in the print media.
And it's like, well, actually, that's not relevant now.
No, who gets the paper these
days? That's right. But actually, you're unconstitutional if you don't do those things when they are in your founding document. And that is why it's really important to do those regular updates too.
And another one is around how to hold your meetings. So, you know, it was always everyone came to a venue, you know, whether it was someone's house, whether it was offices, wherever it may be, and your meetings were all held in person. But, of course, especially when COVID came along and we had to keep operating but couldn't meet in person, the company's office did give discretion for societies or also charitable trusts to meet online or even start having hybrid meetings if need be, even if it wasn't in the constitution, but you only had that exemption for a while.
That's right.
So another key reason to make sure that you are changing your constitution to ensure that you can have alternative ways of meetings, whether it's, as I say, all online, whether it's that hybrid, half in person, half online. Someone can be on the phone.
We also have found that a number of people, a number of organisations now will every now and then have an email meeting where they email around the resolutions and then get the quorum to vote on the resolutions. A lot of constitutions don't actually allow for that.
Correct.
Yeah. So again, you know, really critical to make sure that as you say, it's fit for purpose, right? So when you're looking at that document builder, just thinking about those things, how do we operate? What helps us to do the things we really want to do?
Yeah, and even like things like how many days' notice do we give you know, to call for the annual general meeting or the special general meeting?
Does the new Act have a minimum period for... I've asked a question that we're not sure of right now.
Look, from what I remember looking through the Constitution Builder myself, you have the opportunity to
set
in
a time,
whatever time it is, whether it's most look at sort of like that 21-day, that 21-day notice. It's really around making sure it's realistic for your people. And if you are looking at seeking nominations for elected positions, you want to make sure that you've got time for people to put their nominations in and then for you to then send out to the members in advance, you know, who it is that's been nominated for certain positions, especially if you have too many nominations for the number of positions vacant.
Yeah.
Those sorts of things.
There's also, I think, really important to think about conflict.
Yes. So that's a big one that's come up, is that every single constitution going forward to comply with the 2022 Act must have a dispute resolution clause in there. And I think a lot of that's come about because they've fielded so many inquiries or complaints over the last so many years around a dispute, whether it's within the organisation itself, you know, whether it's a member with the board or committee, whoever it might be. So there's in the Constitution Builder, there's a very detailed dispute resolution clause. And it's actually a great clause that you could then take all that out and make it your own dispute resolution policy.
I think that's excellent, because I think as advisors as well, you guys often have to refer people back to their constitution when they say, how do we deal with this? You know, you say, go back to your constitution, look at what it says. And so often there aren't the details that help guide people.
Yeah, or else they're very, very vague.
Yeah.
Yeah, most definitely. And it's just so unrelevant to today. So, yeah, I think it's critical that, you know, you do have those dispute resolution clauses in the Constitution, but also a separate policy, guidelines, so that when a dispute does come in, you know what to do, how to handle it, the process to be undertaken. Worst thing you can possibly do is just try and ignore it, like sweep it under the carpet and hope it'll go away.
It doesn't.
No, it doesn't. And if anything, it just festers and festers and becomes, you know, much bigger problem in the long way. Around our whoever's on our committee or our board, our governing body as such, they're also now going to be known as officers of the organisation. You also have a clause in there around the duties of the officers, that, you know, they must act with duty of care, making sure that all the decisions they make is in the best interests of the members and the overarching organisation, that the purposes of the organisation are being followed. They're not all of a sudden going off and doing something random that actually has nothing to do with the initial purpose of the organisation. Those sorts of things. They're all fairly common sense. Not getting the organisation into substantial debt, those sorts of things. So it's always about making sure with your duty of care around your financials, having a budget, making sure you're comparing your budget to your actual expenditure, those sorts of things.
I'm hoping that people who have been listening who might be a part of an incorporated society that hasn't done this yet, I'm hoping people are listening to this and not getting overwhelmed, but thinking, actually, this stuff could be helpful. This could be helpful for our organisation. But to know as well that at the very least, just jump on the company's office website and look at the Constitution Builder, because it will save you so much time and stress, right? Like, don't think you've got to start from scratch and then figure out how you get legally compliant.
That's so true. And the good thing about it too is you can get halfway through, a third of the way through, and if you go, I don't know the answer to that, I'm going to have to ask one of our other committee members, you can actually save it. Save it, and then you'll get sent a link, emailed a link through, and then when it's time to start it again, you just click on your link and you start where you finished off. And that's really great. And as I said before, at the end, once you've finished, you will get a draft template of that constitution, and you can then download that, print it out, and as I mentioned, best thing I do, get your current constitution, that constitution together, compare them, make sure that it is going to be relevant and fit for purpose for your society.
And then you need your members to agree to it, right? So can we talk about that part of the process?
Yeah, sure. So you need to either, depending on when your annual general meeting is coming up, but be mindful that this process needs to be completed before the 5th of April. It may be that you need to hold a special general meeting. So again, go back to your current constitution, look at your timelines of how much notice you need to give. The committee has the right to call that. You need to make sure that you have enough members turn up, that you've got a quorum, whatever your quorum is, again, that's in your constitution, that you're then looking to adopt your whole new constitution. If you need to, you provide a little bit of an overview of the changes. And then once your members have agreed on that, then you would look to download the registration form, again, from the company's office. Process is all online. Someone needs to have a RealMe login, and then you upload the constitution and the registration form.
So it's actually not too bad. Once you start that process, the key is to get in front of your members in time, get your resolution passed, and then start uploading the details onto company's office.
That's correct.
And if you have any questions about this and you are a you know, social service or, if you're not sport or arts, come to us for a conversation.
Yeah, put in a service request, go to our website and put in a service request. And also too, we'll be making sure we've got more information up on our website later on in this month.
Yeah, it's awesome. Thank you so much, Roseanne. Really appreciate your knowledge on this, and hopefully soon it'll all be wound up.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks, Holly.
You've been listening to Connect with Community Waikato, 3FM 89.0.
This 3FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.